Good morning and welcome to another International Connection. We're continuing with our series on mind control. This is the 12th in the series, and this will be continuing another 5 months on CKLN on this time slot. Today we're going to be hearing an interview with Valerie Wolf, Claudia Mullen, and Chris Ebner just after they had given testimony of mind control and radiation experimentation done to them as children to the Presidential Advisory Committee on Human Radiation Experiments. Valerie Wolf is a therapist of Claudia Mullen and Chris Ebner, both survivors of torture and abuse as part of mind control experiments conducted by the U.S. government. We heard 6 weeks ago on this show the actual testimony given at the radiation hearings. Today we're going to hear an interview conducted by a local cable radiation hearings. Today we're going to hear an interview conducted by a local cable TV producer from Missoula, Montana. Claudia and Chris describe how the mind control doctors induced dissociation or multiple personalities through traumatization and abuse for the purpose of programming the personalities to perform various military, intelligence, and criminal acts. You're listening to CKLN 88.1, and now that interview.
Valerie, you testified today at the President's Council on Radiation, along with two of your clients, and a story unfolded there which America should hear. Probably many Americans will not believe when they hear it. But in your work as a professional therapist, what have you found with respect to children and experimentation?
Basically, what we as therapists across the country are finding are a group of clients that formerly were considered untreatable, that based on recent information we're finding are reporting having been subjects in mind control experimentation performed by the government, the CIA, and the military establishment, probably from about the late 1940s until middle 80s, and may even still be going on today.
Is there any official documentation of these protocols or these experiments?
There is some documentation of it. There was a commission on mind control in the late 70s, but it mostly focused on the use of adults, prisoners, and mental patients. What got missed were the children that were being used in these experiments. And the reason I think that the children were missed is because they were either too young to speak out at that time, or they were still involved in the experimentation.
When did you first receive either written documentation or electromagnetic information about this? Is this something that's circulating within the group of therapists nationally?
Basically, the information was released at the regional conference, the Eastern Regional Conference on Multiple Personality and Dissociative Disorders in June of 92. Those of us that were working with severely dissociated clients listened to the information and followed up with it. I myself have had contact with 7 clients that report being subjects in these experiments. And the way that I have proceeded is I have deliberately not read any of the documentation or read any of the books, because there are several books written on this. Basically, what I've done is, as my clients' memories have emerged, I've sent the information to Alan Shefflin, who's an expert in this area, to validate the memories. And I've done that so that he'll call me back and say, do you know about such and such? Do you know about such and such? I have no clue about any of this. And these clients are real sensitive to everything, so that if I knew something, I don't want to cue them or give them information or contaminate their memories. So basically, the memories are coming absolutely with total free recall. There's no cueing from me. In fact, they'll tell you that I basically say very little. I don't give them any information as far as what's going on, only as their memories come up and to validate the memories.
Mr. Shefflin has filed some FOIA or Freedom of Information requests. We heard that today at the hearing. Have there been documents provided by the government to him?
It's been very difficult. He spent 20 years of his life gathering information on this. A lot of the requests for Freedom of Information Act information have been slowed down or denied. It's very difficult to get this information. And that was one of the reasons we appeared at the Radiation Commission today, because in an attempt to ask them to recommend or an investigation of this, and also to help us open the files and get the information we need. Because we need to, being responsible, we want to know if what these clients are saying is true. Now, what I have found in terms of the stuff that I've sent and other therapists have found is that some of it can be verified and that they are telling the truth. And some of the information we're supplying can only come, is not published anywhere. It can only come if you file Freedom of Information Act information. And obviously these clients haven't, but they know things that there's no way that they could know unless they went through the experience.
There are things that can't even be found through Freedom of Information Act, like the identity of people that were hidden, the description.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Your two clients here, Claudia and Chris, met through your practice. Can you tell me a little bit about the encounter and the discovery that both of you had been involved in Central Intelligence Agency or U.S. government experimentation? How did this all come to light between the two of you as clients?
Between Chris and I?
Yes.
There wasn't any real connection between Chris and I. I hadn't seen her for 2 years, and the last time I saw her, I was being treated for post-traumatic stress disorder for something that happened to me that had nothing to do with this. I had no memory of being a victim of this. Chris had no memory. So as far as Chris and I didn't even know that she was, although I knew she was Valerie's patient, I didn't know that she was recovering memories just like I was, because she doesn't discuss one patient with another, one client with another. So there isn't any connection between Chris and I, other than the fact that we have the same therapist.
But you did have the same doctor at one time. Dr. Green.
Oh, well, yes.
Chris, would you like to talk about Dr. Green?
Sure. Yes, Dr. Green performed radiation as well as mind control and drug experiments on me between 1966 and 1976. And it was done out in the desert, and he worked really on mind control with me. He was he did use radiation experiments on me, as far as I remember him doing some radiation experiments on my uterus and my chest, throat, neck, things like that. He also, but his main objective with me was to groom me into, actually to gain total control of my mind and to split it apart into as many different areas as he could, and developed me into a spy assassin. And as I resisted him more and more, he turned it all against me. He used different sorts of trauma techniques and basically trauma, drugs, messages, post-hypnotic suggestions, and then more trauma. So basically what he wanted was to get me to self-destruct.
Valerie, how do we know that the CIA was targeting certain children, certain types of children? How do they recruit these children if in fact that's what they were doing?
The information that I had is that what they were looking for were children who were already traumatized, who were already abused, children who were very intelligent, children who had good memories. And so what they would do is look in clinics. A lot of the kids from military families. In Chris's case, her father had military connections, and he actually started grooming her. Some of the parents felt, and you have to understand, we're talking Cold War mentality where this started. And we forget about that sometimes, the in terms of fighting communism and the end justifies the means and the kind of thought that was available at that time. So there were people that thought they were truly doing something for their country. There were also people that were really sadistic and people that were pedophiles that hurt their children. And so what they were looking for were kids that were already abused.
Claudia, what are your earliest recollections of this process?
Of the projects? Of being involved.
Yes. How did the government select you, and what do you remember about it?
Well, I was brought to Tulane University by my mother. I'd been abused since the time I was, 2 years old, and she was friends with the chairman of the board, Mr. Fenner, at the time, and she asked for a recommendation of the top psychiatrist in New Orleans, and Dr. Robert G. Heath, who was head of the department at Tulane University Medical School, was recommended. And he, as a favor, took me on as a private client. He said he didn't treat children, but he would make an exception. And he said he would treat me for free. Well, my mother was, she signed a consent for anything that he deemed necessary. And he came up with a diagnosis of schizophrenia, childhood schizophrenia, and aberrant behavior, just to, have something to put down in the medical records. What he was doing, actually, was he had already agreed to receive, I believe, something along the lines of $30,000 at first. No, $300,000 at first over so many years for Tulane in exchange for using a whole ward of patients or subjects that he could get, as many as he could fit, and conduct experiments on them. He was already involved in research on brain mapping and doing all sorts of brain experiments, and he was considered one of the top in his field, and so they went to him and asked, and I just happened to get sent there at the age of 7, and from then I kept going back for treatments, I was told. I would not recall when I left what had happened while I was there. Dr. Heath would tell me what had happened. I'd go home, and then the next time they needed me, they would call my mother and say she needs to come back for a treatment. I'd go over there, and, the same thing. I wouldn't remember when I went home. So in between, I had no memory.
Valerie, you had two clients then who had come to you in adult life,
yeah,
with some very, very serious problems. You had some information, mm-hmm, about programming. Had you at that time put two and two together with respect to these two clients? Did you suspect that they had been part of a government program? What happened?
Actually, when each of them first became my client, I had absolutely no idea. The way that I discovered it with Chris was that a couple of months after I got the information, she started showing some of the behaviors that had been described and started the downhill slide that usually led in these kinds of clients to the hospital. So out of sheer desperation, I figured, well, this is worth a try. Started some very, very careful, gentle inquiries and uncovered, it was like whammo, there it was. And literally, that's the way it was.
What did you find? What was displayed to you that led you to believe that?
Well, basically, what she was showing was this really compulsive behavior to hurt herself, really compulsive behavior to kill herself, do her self-destruct kinds of stuff. And it was like a repetitive thing. And the puzzling thing about it is, Chris really didn't want to die. So why was she doing these kinds of things? And it was like it was something that was separate from her. Plus, she'd had all these years of therapy, and good therapy, before she came to me. 12 years or 10 years of therapy before she came to me, and had good therapy, and she'd made progress, but not to the degree that you would expect. And those were the kinds of things that were talked about, and those are the kinds of things that I've come to understand. When you have good therapy and clients aren't making progress, you're missing something. And so when I started making very indirect, non-leading kinds of inquiries, basically what happened was, is we got into memories of electric shock, memories of codes, things like that that we started working with. And basically, I mean, that's what... And then, but there had been no mention of her being a government subject. And I never brought it up with her, even though I knew that that's what it meant, what she was... And we were working it through therapeutically. But I had never said a word to her. And a couple of months ago, maybe 4 or 5 months ago, after finishing a memory, Chris asked for a paper and pencil and started writing out CIA confidential memos. And that was the first that... and I had never mentioned anything about CIA involvement to her. As far as Claudia's concerned, she came to me with the same kind of thing where... I mean, she's bright, she's verbal, and she wasn't making... I mean, she was working real hard in therapy, and we were working through stuff, and she ended up in the hospital, which is unusual for the kinds of things. I mean, I have 22 years of experience in dealing with abuse and these kinds of things. And so one day she came in after about 9 months of therapy with a piece of paper with words written all over it, and in the middle was MK Ultra. And MK Ultra is the name of the is one of the names of one of the projects associated with the mind control. And that's when I knew that she was involved. I had never also said anything to her about it.
Claudia, at the time when you brought this document in, did you know what it was or where it came from?
I had no idea what the word meant. I didn't know what it stood for. I didn't know. It was just something that started coming forward in my memory, and I would get bits and pieces. I would remember doctors, names of doctors, and I'd say, "Have you ever heard of this man? Who is he?" "I don't know." You know, Valerie didn't know. I would remember. I started remembering treatments, but it was just bits and pieces. It wasn't like I couldn't remember whole weeks at a time. I had gaps. I'd always had gaps in my childhood that I couldn't remember, gaps of time that were lost. I didn't know why. And then I came to understand that I was abused by my mother. So I assumed that that was, you know, and that's why I went into treatment, was for post-traumatic stress syndrome. And then eventually I learned that I was abused by my mother, but that I thought that was the extent of it. I had never had any clue. I didn't even recall ever being to Tulane University Medical Center. Never remember going there. I never thought I'd been to Washington, D.C., but I had.
Do both of you now remember going into laboratories or clinics or being involved in immersion therapies or dark rooms, those kinds of things?
Yes.
Chris?
I remember being in a laboratory in 1966. I was 4 years old. And I was strapped down on a table, and on my back, I was naked. I had electrodes all over my body, my head, temples, chest, stomach, back, legs. And Dr. Green was there, and there were other children in the room as well. And it was a laboratory at Kansas City University. And I remember him saying that he had what looked like an overhead projector, and he was saying that, and he had a red flashing light, and he said that he was going to burn images in my brain, and that I would do whatever he told me to do, and how the images would go deeper and deeper into my brain, and that, you know, just consistently repeating the information along with electric shock, and he would use the electric shock, and then he would use the imagery, and then more electric shock and drugs to make me drowsy. Sometimes I would pass out, whatever. But yes, I do remember that. I remember being in a dark room as well. Actually, a lot of the experiments took place in a dark room out in the desert in Tucson, Arizona. Most of the experiments took place there with Dr. Green.
People today at the hearing asked, where were your parents? How did this happen? How could you be taken out from your home or the place where you lived? and brought into this situation?
My parents were divorced around when I was 4 years old, a little before. And my mom had no knowledge, but my father was involved in the experiments. Don Ebner, Donald Richard Ebner, my father, was involved with Dr. Green, and he would sneak me out of the house in the middle of the night. I remember actually, you know, feeling drugged in the house, and these men coming in, and he would take me out. He'd sneak me out of the house in the middle of the night, and my mom would be asleep, and that's how he gained access to me. Also, visits and things like that. But they did most of the experimentation in the middle of the night, and you know, he just found his way into the home. My mom had no knowledge of it at the time. She divorced him because I was afraid of him, and she couldn't figure out what was wrong. And so he had to be sneaky in order to get a hold of me, and that's how he got. He would do that. He would just, you know, he got the key from me, and you know, he'd sneak in the middle of the night and drag me out and bring me back before my mom would wake up, and that's when most of the experiments took place. And I've talked to my mom since then, now since the memories have surfaced, and she confirms that she absolutely believes that he was capable and did, in fact, participate in these experiments.
Was he a member of the United States military?
Yes, he was.
And do you remember other military people that were coming into your home at that time, or that he would associate with or talk with?
No, the only person I know was my dad, Don Ebner. Now, I can, you know, tell you names of memos that I saw with people from, like, from the military and internal affairs, memos I saw in Dr. Green's office, but off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you the military names.
Claudia, do you remember Dr. Green?
Oh, very well. The first time I met him, from my understanding now, most of the time he kept himself disguised and used different names depending on what part of the country he was in. At Tulane, he saw no reason to do that, I guess, and so he would wear a white coat just like any other doctor, and he wore a name tag, L. Wilson Green. But he didn't like anyone calling him anything but doctor. He didn't even like being called Dr. Green. And I remember him. I knew him from the years 1957 until about 5 years before he died in 1988.
So Dr. Green was operating at Tulane University and also at Kansas University?
He was going to 44.
And in Tucson. He was...
And in Tucson.
Dr. Green has been reported. He is probably the most consistent figure or doctor that's reported by almost everybody. And he went under the names of Dr. Green, Dr. Greenbaum, Green Tree, what else?
Greenberg,
but always with the Green in his name. And he traveled throughout the country, training people, offering consultation, and then also doing stuff on his own, I think, as Chris has experience with.
Yeah, and he used disguise with me as well. I never saw him without a surgical mask.
No, he didn't use disguise with me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said that. He always had a surgical mask and usually something on his head, and all I ever saw was a little bit of, you know, the black rim glasses and whatever. And he was just a sadistic, evil man, and he hated me because I would not comply with what he wanted me to do.
We have memories that have surfaced here at some point in time. Did both of you or either of you recall these memories before you got into therapy? Were there some memories at all of what had happened to you?
Well, there would be times in my life over the years since I was, I guess the last year I was in the, actually involved in the projects was 1983. After that, I was supposed to be monitored by a doctor. that was a family friend, and who was to keep track and make sure that I wasn't ever getting any memory back. And if I was, he was to report it to Dr. Heath or Dr. Green. And I would start to get somatic symptoms, the headaches, I'd end up in the hospital, and they couldn't find any reason for the illness. They would call in this Dr. Brown, and then he would notify the other doctors, and they would make sure that my my amnesia was reinforced, and so then forget.
Valerie, what's the significance of these organic symptoms which presented?
Basically, what you have to understand is how trauma memories are encoded, and that's sort of the technical term for how memories are remembered. There's been a lot of controversy recently about research on memory. There's been a lot of research done on memory, and what they're finding is a lot of the information that's now in the public is about normal memory. One of the things that those of us that work with traumatic memory have found is that it's very different, even as to where it's stored in the brain. Regular memories are stored in the area of the brain called the hippocampus. The trauma memories, I saw a recent article, are stored in a more primitive part of the brain called the amygdala. And basically what happens is that if there's information to remember and there's pain associated with the information, then the two get stored together in the brain. So in order to remember the information, you also remember the pain. And so what happens with these clients is that there was so much pain from the electric shock, from the other things that they did, or drug effects, because sometimes you get a drug effect or a very drugged kind of memory. And but in terms of the physical pain, so as Claudia, for example, started to remember, the first thing she's going to remember is the pain, wherever it is in her body that was stored with the information. Well, if you intervene and reinforce the amnesia, the pain before the information comes, you don't remember the information. In order for them to remember, they have to go through the pain first, and then the information comes.
So is it fair to say then that the United States government was using the barrier of pain as a barrier to memory?
Absolutely, yes. And it's difficult. It's difficult, hard work. I mean, these two people are extremely courageous. They come in and they know that when they're working, that they're going to be in a great deal of pain, and they're willing to go through it because they want to be free. And I want to say the purpose of treatment here is not to uncover memories. The purpose of treatment here is to undo the messages that they were given. And there were a lot of them. And basically, I've been doing a lot of thinking recently as to why some people have to remember and some people don't, even though they've both been traumatized. And what I've realized is when someone is traumatized, if the perpetrator is silent, and when someone's traumatized, they basically go into a trance, because you have to get away from it some kind of way, so you separate from yourself and you go into trance. If the perpetrator is silent, then nothing much really gets in. And those clients where the messages are separate from the actual trauma really don't have to remember the trauma. But those clients where the messages are part of the trauma have to remember the trauma. The point of therapy is to get to the context, to get to the conclusions that people drew about themselves and their world from the trauma, to get to the things that were said to them. And the things that were said to people in the mind control subjects in the experimentation were deliberately said to undermine their personalities, to make them self-destructive, to make them not remember. That's what we want to get to. Now, it so happens we have the memories, and I try to validate and verify where I can. But again, the thing is to restore their functioning.
How many children do we believe were taken into these government programs for these purposes?
Honestly, we really don't know. But just considering the numbers of people that are coming forward, our guess is thousands.
Are they remembering rooms, electrodes, these kinds of things?
The memories are extremely consistent. in preparation for my testimony, I sort of talked to a few people, word got out, and almost 40 therapists called me from all over the country, from California to New York, all over the country, giving me information. I supplied backup documentation, statements from clients all over the country, and it is remarkably consistent what they report. And these people don't know each other. They haven't talked to each other. And therapists, like, for example, me, I'm the only one in my area that I know of doing this work. I've talked to one other person, but I haven't really talked to all these people, nor have they talked to other people. So we're not sharing the information. We're hearing stuff independently.